patriotic contributions. Savine walked down the echoing hallway, shaking her head. This building, it feels more like a prison than a palace. It is a shade shady, admitted Zuri, running a fastidious finger down the top rail of the panelling. Austenholm was pretty enough, if rather lacking in modern conveniences, and the air was a great deal cleaner than she was used to, but the Lord Governor's residence itself was horribly oppressive. A labyrinth of gloomy stonework and faded tapestries, displays of tarnished weaponry and armour, antique furniture old and large enough to have been used by Great Eos himself, its slitted windows overgrown by ivy that let only chinks of dusty light into the murk, all smelling of fust and slow decay. They hardly have an excess of sun up here, said Savine. You might expect them to make the best use of what there is. Almost enough to make one nostalgic for the south. Zuri neatly blew the smudge of dust from her fingertip. Were it not for all the civil war... The whole province of Angland is trapped in the past. A very great deal needs to change around here. Nowhere was that more obvious than in the so-called Governing Council. It might better have been called the Grumbling Council, since the old men around the monstrous table in the cavernous hall treated every point of business as a problem to be avoided in the most tedious way imaginable. The old boars tolerated Savine and Lady Finry's presence, provided they sat at a rickety side table and busied themselves with something feminine. Occasionally, when some particularly dated opinion or provincial attitude was expressed, their eyes would meet and Leo's mother would roll hers to the heavens. The young Lord Governor Brock appeared entirely uninterested in the mechanics of governing, almost nodding off at times to the droning of ancient voices, until the subject of Angland's armies came up.
"Since savings must be made in order to satisfy the closed council," gurgled out Clencher, sounding as if he had a sockful of gravel in his throat, "I move that we reduce Angland's standing armies by 2 regiments, and—"
"No," snapped Leo, sitting up so sharply his chair's legs jumped and banged down. Savine could not tell whether it was Mustard's chair or his joints that gave the tortured creak as he sat forward.
"Your Grace, your father could not, and you cannot afford to maintain them in—"
"Angland has to keep her military strong. If anything, we should raise more men."
Lady Finry chose that moment to set aside her needlework. "Leo, your lords have a point. As things stand, we need money more than soldiers, and—" Leo bashed the table with his fist, making everyone flinch.
"I've made my decision. I didn't ask for your advice, Mother."
There was an awkward silence. Leo turned angrily away, rubbing at his leg. Lady Finry coloured as she retreated to her chair. Savine felt for her, she really did, but she was yesterday's woman. Her son might act like a child on occasion, but treating him like one was a blunder. If he had to have his toy soldiers, Savine would find a way to give them to him. While he was busy playing army, she could mould Angland into the thoroughly modern province she needed it to be.
"My lords, if I may—"
Mustard cleared his throat.
"Well, actually—"
"I think I have a way to satisfy the closed council and fund the strong army that we need."
Clencher snorted.
"Are you a sorceress, Lady Savine? Will you conjure money out of thin air?"
"In a manner of speaking."
She stood, setting her hand down on the great stack of ledgers Haroon had brought in. "I took the liberty of examining the accounts of the province over the past 10 years. Mustard rubbed at the bridge of his nose.
"Lady Savine, we have been preparing those very accounts for many years before that."
"But the nature of finance, commerce, industry and law has transformed in that time, and these old fools had barely even noticed. I have done a great deal of business here. Here and in Middleland, Starrickland, Styria and beyond, I see many opportunities for new revenue. At the word revenue, Mustard and Clench's brows shot up as though hoisted by a single chain. They were like any other investors in the end. The bottom line was all that really mattered.
With your kind permission, I would meet with some interested parties, owners of land, mines and mills, operators of penal colonies, with a view to raising more taxes. She gave Leo's shoulder the gentlest of reassuring touches. I am confident you would be pleasantly surprised.
A pleasant surprise would be a nice change.
Leo put his hand on hers and looked across at the old men.
Where's the harm in trying?
Sabine gave the old windbags of Angland her sweetest smile.
Where indeed, my lords?
Master Aranhorm, what a tonic to see an old friend. The sounds of the workmen putting new windows into the facade echoed faintly from outside as Rabik showed him into the room. I apologize for all the commotion. I'm making a few changes, bringing things up to date. Aranhorm leaned to kiss Savine's hand.
Lady Savine, it's...
Your Grace.
He winced ever so slightly.
Of course, Your Grace. I apologize. It's a lot to get used to.
Consider it from where I sit. Whoever would have thought I might find myself Lady Governor of Angland?
Aranhorm sourly worked his mouth.
Not I.
I dare say when I turned down your scheme for increasing the efficiency of mines, we supposed we would have nothing more to do with one another. Now fate forces us to become partners regardless.
Aranhorm frowned over at Zuri, who had the book open on the desk in front of her.
Partners?
Partners, Your Grace, corrected Zuri without looking up. You and your investors in the coal, iron and copper mines of Angland are making great profits, said Savine. I know, because Celeste Dan Huygen never stops boasting about it.
We have had some success.
I delight in it, but while you have been thriving, others have suffered. My husband has been obliged to fight a costly war against enemies who would do us all harm, and the demands of the crown never cease. Angland has been most welcoming to you and your partners, not to mention all manner of mill owners, landowners, builders and innovators. It is time to spread the burden.
Aranhorm delicately cleared his throat.
Your Grace, these are our mines. They were made successful through my hard work and my investors' risk.
I understand the principle. I have done a little investing myself. Of course you own the mines. Apart from the ones I own, which are failing for lack of your new pumps. You own the mines, you own the ore mined from them. No one would deny it.
We're not pirates, threw out Zuri, with a grin that might have sat quite well on a pirate.
But you do not own the rivers and roads that carry that ore to the sea, nor the docks on which that ore is loaded for transport to Middleland. Those belong to my husband.
Savine opened her eyes very wide, as though the realization had but that moment dawned.
Why, I suppose that means they belong to me.
Zuri fluttered her lashes, all innocence.
So much to take care of.
Aranhorm was looking more and more uncomfortable.
We pay towards their upkeep.
Token amounts, as we both know, said Savine.
We have gone over the books, Master Aranhorm. I get the feeling that the worthy old gentlemen who have been in charge of Angland's government do not fully understand the books. But we do. And we see all kinds of ways to make things more equitable. Ways for the industries of the province to contribute to the common good.
And if I refuse?
Savine shrugged. I suppose you can always fly your ore across the Circle Sea.
Aranhorm was moving from discomfort to anger. Savine rather enjoyed seeing it.
We will simply cut off supply. In no time, the foundries of Middleland will be clamouring at you to turn the tap back on.
By all means, let your ore rot in your warehouses. But then, of course, the price of ore will rocket,
and I imagine my failing minds will not be failing very much longer." Savine spread her arms comfortably across the back of the chaise. "So you see, whichever door you open, Savine's in first. In business, Master Aaronholm, you must be realistic." Zuri pressed one hand to her breast. "You have to be realistic. Here is our suggestion. You will pay duties for every ton of ore moved over every mile of my husband's province. You will also sign over to him a 1/10 interest in all your concerns."
"But you acknowledge they're our mines."
"Of course," Zuri nodded earnestly. "And by my calculations, 9/10 of them still will be."
"This is robbery,"
he spluttered at her. "I said we are not pirates. Robbery is a much broader category. But the heading in my book is for..." She ran her finger down the page and tapped neatly at an entry. "Patriotic contributions." "There," said Savine. "Doesn't that sound better? Something we can all take pride in. You will also fit your pumps to my mines at your own expense. Then we can allow you to operate."
"Allow?"
Aaronholm stared at her open-mouthed. "Allow your grace," corrected Zuri with impeccable timing. Savine had heard it said that it is best to beat opponents fairly, but she much preferred beating them with the deck stacked wildly in her favour. "It has been a great regret," she said, "that I let your scheme slip through my fingers simply because I find you personally detestable. I am so pleased we got the opportunity to do business together in the end."
"I will go to your husband,"
snarled Aaronholm. "You will go to the young lion to complain about his wife?" Savine gave Zuri a pitying look. Zuri gave one back. "I imagine a man would be lucky to come away from that interview with his teeth."
"I have friends on the Open Council,"
snapped Aaronholm. "I have dozens of them," said Savine with a sigh. "That's how I know how little good they do."
"I will go to the closed..."
"Let me spare you the wasted effort. The closed council want revenue, and they have asked my husband to find it, so he has asked me to find it. I am doing so with the enthusiastic endorsement of everyone who counts. Speak to your investors by all means, but my honest advice is to pay up before you make me squeeze harder. You'd be amazed at how powerful my grip has become since I married the Lord Governor. I would hate to accidentally crush someone completely, but it could happen," murmured Zuri. Aaronholm wobbled to his feet, but he had nothing to say. Savine had made sure of that. All he could do was turn on his heel and stalk from the room. "Oh, and Aaronholm," he looked back in the doorway, fists, teeth, and no doubt arsehole clenched.
"Your Grace," he managed to hiss.
"When you see her, do pass on my regards to Celeste Danhuygen." The door clicked shut, and Savine settled comfortably back again. She realized she had not thought about Valbeck all day. "Is it wrong of me to have enjoyed that one?" asked Zuri, checking the watch, then marking another tick down in her ledger. "We must take our pleasures where we can. Who's next?"